one of the nice things about looking at lots of UFO evidence, which of course the skeptics, debunkers don't, is that you see here that life moves on, that there's colonization, that there's migration. So how long it lasts doesn't really matter in terms of timescales that we know something about. I don't worry what happened a billion or a million years ago on this planet. We don't know much about the past history of the planet. Ignorance is bliss, I suppose, for some people. I'm thinking of Henrik Schliemann, who said, hey, I think Troy ought to be right here, the mythical Troy from the Iliad and so forth. This is about 1875 or so. And a historian said, hey, come on, there's no Troy. This is bunk. That's mythology. Well, he was rich, and he could afford to pay people to dig down 75 feet. And lo and behold, he found Troy from just a few thousand years ago. Now, how much of the planet have we explored down 75 feet, George? It's a darn small percentage of it. So we may have had many civilizations that have come and gone, and that isn't the question. The question is what's happening now. That's where we say there are alien visitors.
All right, Michael, let's get your take on that question.
Well, first of all, we should remember that for every Heinrich Schliemann who successfully discovered something that really exists, there's, you know, 1,000 non-Schliemanns who had wild ideas about Atlantis and lost continents here and lost cities there, and they never found them. And so we tend to remember the hits and forget the misses. We exalt the heroes, the Galileos, the Wright brothers. You know, they laughed at the Wright brothers. Yeah, well, they laughed at the Marx brothers. So what? Being laughed at doesn't make you right or wrong. It's a separate issue. And one of my columns for Scientific American, which I wrote on the value of L in the Drake equation is the length of time that a civilization might last, and it's notoriously, you know, empty in the Drake equation. I mean, what number do you plug in there? We only have one civilization. Well, a different way to look at it is how long have civilizations lasted on Earth? And the answer turns out to be roughly about 350 years before a political unit goes extinct, and essentially you start over with a different political unit, something like that. Now, the SETI people have countered my argument there, my argument being that L is very low, not enough time. That's why we haven't heard from extraterrestrials yet. Not enough time for them to have gotten here, their civilizations go extinct, something like that. And their counter to that is you don't have to have a single continuous political unit. You just have to have the technology carried forward from one political organization to another, one civilization to another. As long as you have the technology of space exploration, once it's achieved, it can't be eradicated, something like that. Well, you know, these are kind of fun thought experiments, but that's all we have at the moment on that is the history of life on Earth. So, but I think your question is hugely important and deep that and Stan referred to this earlier, that any civilization that we would encounter is not going to be, first, as I said, they're not going to look anything like us. But second, they're not going to be just barely ahead of us, technologically speaking. I mean, the idea that we back-engineered from alien spacecraft to transistors because we were still stuck at the vacuum tube stage. You know, transistors are just, you know, one more step above that. And now we're, you know, moving on beyond that and so forth. Like they're only 10 years ahead of us technologically. I mean, they would be millions of years ahead of us technologically because the chance of them evolving in lockstep pace with us is pretty nil. So
we probably agree, Michael.
Yeah. So that's why I thought Sagan's brilliance in Contact was to not show the aliens. You know, when Jodie Foster encounters the alien, it's her father.
Right, in an image of. That's
yeah,
right.
They pulled the image out of her mind, right? Well, he did that for a reason, because he recognized our chauvinism, that we always tend to show aliens to be a lot like us, but they have less hair or bigger heads or, you know, something like that. And he used to call this, you know, carbon chauvinism, that even the very idea of that we have to be based on carbon, you know, that itself may be a egocentric, chauvinistic position. And we it's really hard for any of us to get around that.
Okay,
I think we need to recognize, though, that normally you start with evidence to figure out how something's going to look. How many elephants, you know, do you have to look at? You better find at least one. We've got loads of reports of aliens with the 4,000, 5,000 physical trace cases. 1/6 of them involve reports of strange beings with strange craft. So we should use the evidence to determine our best guess. as what the guys who are coming here look like, not what the guys who are out there look like. The ammonia breathers may be altogether different, but it isn't chauvinism.
But, see, I go by the evidence. The quality of your evidence for what you just said, your 4,000 trace evidences, whatever, is no different than that for Bigfoot and Loch Ness.
Hold on, Stan.
Let him finish. Then you can jump in.
When I talk to the Bigfoot people, they say the same thing. Look, how can you deny the fact that we have thousands and thousands of eyewitness accounts, and they all describe something similar to, you know, the Bigfoot image that we all know? And same thing with Loch Ness and so on. And I always say, yes, of course, it's possible, and maybe those anecdotal stories will add up. Once we have a body, we'll know.
Anecdotal, Michael? Hey, I had soil tested from a physical trace case. That's not anecdotal. It's lab testing.
Yeah, but
cost me good hard-earned cash.
The larger point here is that
all we have is anecdotal evidence.
And that's how you start a research program. Anecdotes are fine to start a research program. But at some point in biology, if you want to name a new species, in biology, you have to have a type specimen, an actual body. So once you have that, then...
Black hole, Michael? No, you don't.
Well, hold on, Stan. Hold on. This is turning out to be Larry King. You guys are punching each other out here. Hold on. You all have a shot here. Go ahead, Michael.
In biology, if you want to name a new species, you have to have a type specimen, a holotype. You have to have an actual, you know, something of evidence, some physical thing that can be photographed, dissected, put on the cover of National Geographic. You know, other scientists can come study it and so on. And you can't do that with these anecdotal stories and blurry photographs and grainy videos and all that. It's a place to start a research program, but ultimately we need some kind of actual spacecraft or alien body.